Welcome to the Near Post Local, football and futsal in the capital region, where too much football or futsal is never likely to be enough. I'm Peter Funnell. Tonight's program is a bit special. Football is life and life is football. Football crosses every boundary in our society and across every nation state, gender, race, ethnic group and religious belief on the planet. Football is so inclusive, and football's capacity to build community is absolutely enormous. One of the most joyful and thoroughly decent things is the game's capacity to help people in need. The game, the real game, that is community football, floats on masses of volunteers. Ordinary people who take on coaching, managing, refereeing, those that work tirelessly and unpaid to assist running football clubs, put their hand in their pocket occasionally to help get something for the club to benefit those that play, the battalions of parents who work behind the scenes for young players and not so young to ensure they are able to play, set up the grounds, run the barbecue or canteen, form transport pools to get players to and from, sort out lost clothes, make sure the water bottles are full, and find the money necessary to register a player to play, and often chip in for those that don't have the money. The list or description is endless. A lot of people buy into football in our community when one young player decides to play football. Football is such a wonderful example of community, and we are a very big community in the ACT region. You could roll every other winter sport up together and still not top football. Football clubs are the social hub for parents, players and supporters. So much important information is exchanged at the games and on the sidelines. The things you find out is just extraordinary. It knocks Facebook and Twitter into the dustbin. Football clubs are vitally important. The health of the game is directly related to the health of the football clubs in the ACT region. And there's another reason they've become important. Our society is far more insular than it was, and we are all getting a bit too self-obsessed. As I watched my club's training for the summer 20s last week, I reflected on community. I watched the coaches giving it their full attention and the football coordinator running around like a lunatic, fetching balls and doing 100 other things, including answering emails from players who either hadn't turned up for training, were ill, or the odd few players who were feeling out whether they could join the club or whether the club wanted them. All this was accompanied by the usual symphony of player noise and the odd display of self-interested behaviour. You get used to it if you coach or work with a club and young players long enough. But sometimes you just wish you could just stop the training and tell a lot of them they are so bloody lucky and not to take it all for granted, and every now and again think of someone other than themselves in the game. The odd player sees it that way instinctively, but most need to be reminded and seldom are. But as I watched our training, I wondered, not for the first time, did many of these young players really know how much voluntary work was being done for them on their behalf and for their benefit? I concluded that in the main, they were bloody clueless. And whose fault was that? Now I am close to tonight's program theme. Football is more than the game. I am always knocked over by the charitable endeavours of some of our football clubs and individual players. Just a couple to illustrate the point. Tuggeranong United FC are running a dawn-to-dusk football game to raise money for Epilepsy ACT. Now, this isn't a club with a lot of money. It's a Premier League club, and it manages its budget carefully. But they can see their way clear to raising money for a good community cause. Now, isn't that just fantastic? In the meantime, Capital Football, Belconnen United, Bell North and Western Creek are running the Football Connect program for children with disabilities. Then there is the Steve Arnott Challenge to raise money for the Canberra Hospital Oncology Ward. look, there are bound to be plenty of other activities out there we never hear about. And we should. These are the real football heroes for me. Wouldn't it be terrific if, as a formal part of our Premier League playing conditions, the players and clubs were to devote a certain amount of time to community work? It could be programmed into the season draw. The Premier League should lead the way. Now to sharpen the pencil on this program theme. Some time ago, I interviewed a bloke called George Hoitker. He's known to many in football and futsal, and definitely known to many generations of young citizens in his capacity as a teacher and coach at Radford College. He's in his third decade there. He's a poet, writer, playwright, musician, actor, player, coach, and thoroughly decent human being. At Radford, he is simply known as H. How wonderfully understated. His two books on junior football are recommended reading for every parent with a child playing football and should be compulsory reading for every coach in junior and youth football in Australia. Nothing else comes close. Now, George Hoitker formed an organisation called Team Support at Radford College, initially around his football players, and they set out to do charitable works in the wider community. His teams were now playing the game in its widest and most productive context in our community. Football was the vehicle for development of these young citizens, and not just as football players. These young players gave up practicing stepovers to step in to help others. One experience benefited the other. The program has grown enormously over the last few years and gone well beyond Radford College and to resounding acclaim. So tonight, we listen to an extract from George Hoitker's book launch for his latest book, Little Life. George reads a section of the book on the team support activity that involved some of his players. The link between Hoitker's philosophy on developing players and developing young citizens is inspirational. This program is for listening and thinking. Football in its widest community context is at the core of this program. I hope you enjoy it.
I'd like to conclude with three sections where Mum always used to do things for me, and I'll read this first bit where I describe why I do the things that Mum did. I remember my very, very first team support group, which is a group of boys that get together and do charity work for various causes. They irritated me so much that I yelled at them, and we had a huge spiteful volcano of fury. And then they looked at me with their puppy eyes, and I felt so bad. I thought I had to temper it to something human. And this is what I said. Boys, I was obsessed with Spider-Man when I was about 7 or 8 years old. So on my birthdays, Mum would go out of her way to make things special. She'd find a theme and, like a brilliant musician, would improvise on it. As I was obsessed with Spider-Man at the time, well, she'd cover the walls with household string woven in the shape of a web. She'd hang cards sent by relatives and friends, briefed on the spidea, from the most sturdy strands of string. She'd visit shops as far away as Queanbeyan to find those snazzy, expensive birthday invitations with Spider-Man swinging valiantly on the front. Then she would lasso all the presents under the webbing and encircle the food and drink on the table with a sprinkling of plastic baby spiders and over-cater so that no one was hungry or thirsty or left with an empty abdomen. The cake would no doubt be shaped like an arachnid, and the party hats, whistles and poppers would all have the creepy, crawly moniker on them. As you know, it wasn't the quantity or quality of what she did that has stayed with me all these years. It was simply that she cared enough to attend to all these detailed things. That every action she committed to in order to make this little kid's day so special was imbued with what could only be described as the perfect cherry on top. And because of that, the associated memories have become lasting and have stayed with this little kid to this very day. In short, lads, she did the job with love. More often than not, as my father's principal task was to keep me heavily and healthily distracted, she did it on her own, quietly, in those brief, blissful minutes an adult so rarely finds for themselves. God, I know that now. Those times when it's far easier to read, write, reflect, recreate, relax. She sacrificed these willingly and regularly for a son who occasionally lost himself in the euphoria of the benefits and forgot to properly thank the source. So maybe boys like Peter Parker, you may have to do some time in the lab alone, researching, to put emphasis on the two vital parts of that word, why it is that you signed up for this gig in the first place. The boys are about to work with kids with disabilities. Make the day special for those kids whose lives you want to touch, and I suspect, lads, that your lives will be touched in turn. Now get on with it. What happened? This is one example. Matt affected me the most profoundly. He was trying to teach a short, pudgy little boy with a natty cream-coloured floppy hat how to catch a football. The eccentric little dude who had limited muscular control, actually had Down syndrome, was adamant that he was going to catch the footy. Most observers would have realistically thought this to be unlikely. I watched Matt, unperturbed and admirably unfrustrated, persist in throwing the ball to the boy and watch it slip through his little mate's hands, donk off his head and simply fly past him. As Matt retrieved the ball, he'd occasionally relay a tip or encourage persistence and regularly provide a positive, non-judgmental sentence of encouragement. We'll get there, mate, hang in there. To the soundtrack of Peter Gabriel and Kate Bush singing, "Don't Give Up, I Know You Can Make It Good." In my head, both indeed hung in there. They kept at it for about 78 times, and you could not help but be transfixed by this example of loving patience. I recalled reading a line by Don DeLillo which stated that the young had an unyieldingness that's fully formed, and here was a positive slant on that characteristic. I only wished with some regret and possibly shame that I had exhibited that much persistence with Matt when I coached him as an awkward pre-teen player all those years ago, when he would stop and freeze during the most frenetic of games and look as though he'd been helicoptered into the middle of a vast English maze. On 79, this is one of the most beautiful moments of my life, the boy caught it. When it happened so quickly and inconsequentially, it seemed the moment might pass by totally unnoticed. Then a smile broke across all our faces and a joy potent enough to make the sky that we look upon crumble and fall and the mountains tumble to the sea was allowed to erupt. Matt went to give the boy a celebratory hug and he quickly realised that this was a practical impossibility. The boy was jumping excitedly, hugging the footy so tightly to his chest that there were no limbs left to throw around his mentor, let alone punching the sky in triumph. Not that he could do that. This didn't seem to affect Matt too much. He was content to observe the fruits of his endeavour as the elated boy began to spread the news of his catch to the world of his peers and even some lucky teachers. And he would not let go of that ball. No way on earth was he giving it back to anyone. No siree. It was his and his alone. Stuck between those hands forever. We would never see it again. I had never seen a group of teenagers so self-possessed, yet so selfless, so compassionate, so willing to love as to be loved. They were unlike themselves or their protected selves. Something had broken through the hard, unyielding cocoon that teenage boys surround themselves with and sometimes allow a beautifully, if not slightly pimply, butterfly to freely flutter from it. For a moment, I was an 11-year-old again after winning a close game. Despite our rocky relationship, after every match, I'd always look around to see if Mum had seen it through to the last, and she'd always be there with the hot chocolate and jelly snakes, ready to celebrate any success, no matter how small. After all, when you win in life's little games, you like to share it with more than just the imaginary crowd that's cheering ecstatically in your head. But today, unlike the past, Mum was absent in all but spirit. She was kilometres away in a nursing home, unable to witness firsthand the lessons that she had taught in kindness, excessive generosity, and the placing of cherries on apexes being magnificently passed down through time. Was that a tear starting to form in my eyes? Bloody hell. Afraid of being seen for the marshmallow I was becoming, I decided to get involved in something mundane to take my mind off things, so I joined the cricket activity. H, you're in the way, one of the boys grumbled in mock admonishment. We've got a job to do here. They were right. My work here was done. The time had come to step aside.
We're talking to George Hoiker, Director of Co-Curricula at Radford. George has been here 20 years. He's in an absolutely unique position to view young Australians, male and female. This is a co-educational school. Football players of both genders. George is a teacher, football player, coach, mentor, actor, poet, writer. Written two pretty good books on junior football. Certainly second is one that ought to be mandatory reading of any coach who dares to get into coaching junior football. But most importantly, let me emphasise, George is in a position to offer comment, inform comment, on the development of the human being here at the school and the integration and use of football in that process. Thanks, George.
thanks, Pete. It's good to be here.
Junior football's our subject. Let's say ages 10 to 18. General observations on junior football. Here at Radford, if you like.
I'll talk more generally, I think.
Okay, good.
It's probably a good place to start. I think junior football's obviously growing quite exponentially, and I think with the World Cup successes that are occurring at the moment happening, I think that the game will just become increasingly popular, and I think my feeling is with that there's coming a little bit of baggage that I'm worried that some people are missing. That is that I think we need to remember that for the majority of people that are playing, sport is a pastime. It's an aspect of life and not an all-consuming, would you say almost religion for a kid that's playing it. And I often think that we make decisions based on, I think the phrase that I've heard you use, Peter, is the kids that are at the actual top of a pyramid, whereas where the reality is that 99.78% of the kids that are playing are actually just playing for fun and for enjoyment, and don't need, I think, to have a lot of the weight of expectations from both parents, coaches, and even themselves thrust upon them all the time as they're just living life. And I'm worried that junior sport has become another serious thing that's sort of like constipating a kid's living and lifestyle. I'm worried that that's the trend and that's where things are going.
Can I quote you back from your excellent book, How to Succeed Without Really Winning? Having experienced that one, I can relate to it. Chapter 5, The Art of Sporting, His Holiness Hoiker's 17.5 Steps Towards Contentment and Fulfillment on Match Days. Must be awful being quoted back to me. This is a good one. Remember to stay happy. Sport has enough constipation associated with it as it is. It need not be about life and death. Sort those issues out away from the sports field. If you don't enjoy it, it's hardly recreation. You said it right.
Oh, thanks. I can't believe hearing that. Again, I think that issue is probably timeless. I would challenge anybody that sort of like would think that what I'm saying is possibly a fallacy to just go out to junior sport on the weekend and have a look. And it wouldn't matter, I think. It doesn't matter what the code is. It doesn't matter what the nature of the sport is, or, you know, whether it's an individual sport or a team sport. You'll find that a lot of that attitude is prevalent.
Football is one activity in the co-curricular program here in Radford, a rich and diverse program. But it's only one of the things that goes on here, and no more important or less important, I would think, in your eyes than anything else.
Yeah, well, I look at it like a food group. One of the things that I always say is when kids are young, it should be a smorgasbord. You should be eating from all of the food groups. If you eat from any one and you eat too much of that, I figure it does bad things to you. My experience over the years of working at the elite and club and school level has been that more often than not, I think it's better to sample life and choose life. We're wanting to specialise our children far too early. When we as adults never did that, or were forced to. Yeah. You know, if you wanted to look at it alternatively. And I'll stand in front of a herd of buffalo and say that I believe that that's not the best thing to do when you're looking at, you know, producing a kid that's had rich experience, diverse experience, and learnt a lot.
There really is a difference between football offered through the school and the club.
I enter that sort of conversation cautiously. I think that when kids play whatever sport they're playing, and we're not just talking about football here at the school level, they get a lot, there's a lot of goodness that comes with that, because the people that they're growing up with in the immediate environment are the people that they're sharing their experiences with through sport. But that's not to say if you're outside of the school environment that those experiences will happen. They'll just happen with different people. So it comes down to a choice that I think a parent really has to make, although some parents leave it to their children to make, is how closed do you want that world, you know, your child's world to be? And when they do everything and express themselves through a school context, they definitely have a rich and holistic experience.
Yep.
But I wouldn't want to go down as saying that therefore school sport is the be-all and end-all, because that wouldn't be fair. And it's also, I think, muddying the issue. It comes down to choice. And unfortunately, a lot of people involved with junior sport, from my experience, don't know the definition of that word. Oh, they make all the choices. Well, they'll make all the choices, including coaching ones for their children. They'll tell them what they need to eat, what they need to drink, how they need to train, how much of their life they have to give up. And you get kids that are coming out of these programs that don't know how to make a single decision about anything that they're doing because they're so used to being force-fed. Mm. And also, I question, because I know that it's happening within football, I question these programs where kids are training 5 days a week after school. When do they meet their friends? When do they tackle their homework fresh? When do they go out with boys and girls at their own age?
Yeah.
When do they get to be a kid? And I like using the term constipation because I think that's what it actually does. You know, like I worry that I could go to a Division III match and see the parents on the sideline behaving in exactly the same way as they are in a Division I match. Mm. That used to be where you could be free, make mistakes and not give a hang, you know. And
not anymore.
And I'm worried that that's not happening.
We're right to the meat of this issue about junior football. When you look at the young players that you've seen come through, what are you expecting to see as they move through their age groups?
Well, I'm one of those people that believes that you've got to put your best coaches on at the younger age groups.
Yep.
Because I think that if they have a really, really productive start, even if it's not totally technically correct, the kids will be in the correct mindset to go through their footballing careers and make the adjustments that they have to. There are so many players that, like, you see it at the rep level when you take on kids at the 14 and 15 age group. There are so many players and parents that are wanting to blame their coach at under 10 or 11 for not. Poor guy's probably just come off the street and decided to do something for community service and hasn't taught them the correct thing. If when they're young, they're started with some good solid basics, and there's things that you can, you know, there's plenty of literature and multimedia out there that can assist people with that sort of stuff, and that's coupled with a healthy mental attitude to sport, I think that any kid's going to be right. A lot of the professional footballers, particularly the ones that are in the current Australian team, are actually late bloomers.
Yeah,
they're players that, you know, weren't world beaters when they were young. And I know Schwarzer, for example, is a very, very good example. Mm. We're talking about a person with almost perfect technique as far as goalkeepers go. Mm. But he didn't have that when he was younger. It was something that, you know, that was nurtured. And
that age group, 8 to 12, the Japanese are now calling the golden years. That's guiding their thinking. To anyone dealing in education, and certainly to parents, if they take the time to think about it, the more done well early, the better the outcome
will be. I agree, but once again, not wishing to sound like I'm sort of like hedging my bets all the time, it's that you've got to be really careful about generalisations because kids develop at different rates. That's true. Develop mentally and physically at different rates, and then you've got the gender issues as well. You know, the girls are racing forward then slow down, the guys get a chance to catch up. And I tend to think with junior kids and sport, and I probably think this about in terms of education as well, is be wary about the gurus that sit on the hill and give you these notions of what is right. You've got to take things on a sort of like a personal level with children, and what can work in the context of this child in this club or school could be totally different.
You see that in football teams, probably most specifically at schools, because you tend to get the same group all the time. So you deal with them at 10, and they come to the first training at 11, and they're all different.
Mm, exactly.
You touched on throwing your best coaches in early. Real good one. Let me quote you again. I don't know which of the 17.5 pointers, Your Holiness, but here we go, about coaches. Remember that the messages you provide throughout a junior player's sporting life can govern, influence, and change the sort of player and person they become. Set a good example so that when a youngster develops grey matter, they will remember you fondly. I have some sympathy for that.
We've probably all been there, haven't we?
Haven't we? But it's true. You really do have to have good coaches. Someone has to put the effort into getting good coaches.
But we're getting less and less people wanting to do it because of, you know, the attitudes that are coming, and it's largely parental.
Yeah.
On the sidelines.
Yeah. Well, how do you tackle that here at Radford?
We actually have a code of conduct, sports policy, which we ask our parents to sign. Whenever that's, what would you say, creatively reinterpreted, we help realign people and say, like, if you want to come and watch your kid, we've got certain rules here. But that once things have been outlined and people are aware of the parameters with respect to things like behaviour, it really is only a few that then step over the line. But you've got to be brave enough to take them on.
Yeah, you do.
You know, when we talk about good sports policy and all that, most people are unafraid to take on these people because they think, oh, you know, it's going to, all that anger and stuff is going to get turned on them. But can I just encourage people to take on the bullies? I mean, because that's all they are. Okay. They're little on the inside, and they need to be reminded about that.
We're right on the hot topic. I reckon at some point in every junior coaching, there will be a subheading, even a chapter on managing parents, which in itself is interesting. Again, let me quote you. And this is about parents. Real good advice to parents. Remember that if you have a son on a team, daughter as well, you will lose a certain amount of objectivity and perspective when coming to terms with success or lack of it. Well, that's just got to be true. That's your experience, obviously.
Well, yeah, very much so. You do lose a sense of what's important and what's not. And the kids aren't really able to engage in any meaningful discussion about their feelings about you.
Because often parents do get entangled in coaching because they end up taking on the coach's job because no one else will do it.
Do it.
Pressure there, isn't there?
I think when there's no one else but you, good for you. The fact that you've probably made that choice means that you deserve a grace. What I find is that if you have to deal with people that are being overly critical about you in that context, have with you coaching forms and referee forms. When I'm walking around on the sidelines, I always have them with me, and you can really, really stop somebody hacking into a ref, for example, by giving them referee forms and asking them to complete a course and give up their Saturdays on a week-in basis and doing it. And it's the same with the coaches. The second you get a coach's criticism, just be humble about it. You just say, yeah, you're probably right, I do have deficiencies in that area. Here, do a level one course, go and find out about my deficiencies and then help me through them.
Give me some clues.
Yeah, and by the way, come twice a week to trainings and the games.
Yes.
and make some sacrifices before you open your big fat mouth.
Yes, indeed. Oh, George, winning and losing. It's definitional. When someone wins, someone loses.
Oh, yeah.
Easier to say. I'll quote you again. Remember to look behind the result. There is always something immensely valuable to be gained from even the smallest or hugest loss. You'll generally learn more from your losses than you do from your wins. Loss is a wonderful mechanism for keeping us all honest as well. Loss and coping with it is an integral part of the game and of life. Isn't that true?
Oh, I stay by that. Boy, I wrote that so long ago, it doesn't sound like me anymore. That sums it entirely up. My happiest experiences have been with my losing team. Yeah. My most intense ones, and we're talking about decades of coaching, my most intense ones have been with the ones that have won. I had a side that didn't lose in 3 years at one stage here. That was the most stressful 3 years of my coaching career.
What does a coach do when they have a junior team and you're getting pounced on every week? Some games, good, it's close loss. Other games, you might be getting flogged.
Well, the first thing is you have to shrug off that devil on your shoulder that's saying it's your fault and say to yourself, get past this. It's not about you. It's about what's happening around you. And you can do everything. There's people available to look at, firstly, the practices and the things that you're doing. Probably if your team is consistently losing, particularly if they're young, you have to make sure that doesn't muddy up their enthusiasm. Kids are a lot more resilient than you actually think.
Yes.
They'll give you the, oh, God, I'm sick of this, I'm losing all the time. But there's a little side of them that's still being there for their friends and playing, and that's enough to work on. But you can't get disenchanted. You have to, you're the adult there, for God's sakes. You have to get over that. You have to create fun in the environment, because I wonder if unsuccessful teams actually forget that.
Yes.
Once again, they you muddy yourself and constipate yourself so much with losing and its associated demons that you actually don't realise that it's taking a lot of pressure off and allowing you to actually do things, experiment with things. But looking for improvement's that hard, but I guess this is the point where the coach does actually have to make an effort. And that's hard when you're the dad that's volunteered, that works, you know, really long hours, and or mum, of course, in the same context. You might have to do a bit of work. You might have to read up on, you know, this works, this doesn't, and be prepared to try some things out. I can guarantee any coach that's feeling that way that the effort that they spend on those sort of things will be rewarded irrespective of what your results are. I had a team once that was losing by double figure digits all the time, and I told them that we'll go to McDonald's every time they lose by less than 10. Okay, and what happens then is every time we lost, we had redefined what a loss meant.
Yeah.
And we were actually winning when we were losing 6 or 7 nil. And that particular team were enjoying themselves by the end of the season. This is what I was saying about before, so much so that the actual results were getting down to the twos and threes. And they, you know, really, when the results were there, we thought we were winning, which in many ways we were. The team was improving and realised it. Parenting's a hard job because the kids take out everything on you, okay? Yeah. And it can be really, really hard for a parent to deal with a kid that's despondent because of loss. But I often find that what you've got to do with kids is you've got to help them see that the world is bigger than they think. Normally when kids are really, really upset about stuff, it's because they can't break out of a very narrow vision of the world and themselves. And you have to help them see that it's not loss in any profound sense, and you have to help them redefine that.
Yeah, very important. The next issue I want to touch on in junior football is the old chestnut of disciplinary problems. Now, of course, that has one meaning at a club level, but it has a more profound meaning at a school-based team. So if a player has a problem, he may well be pulled up in the game. Capital football may or may not deal with the issue. That's a football system response. How do you deal with discipline issues or inappropriate behaviour at a school level? Because you can bring another regime to this.
I don't think how we deal with it with the school would be different than if we were at the club level. You get a yellow card, you get the suspension, but or whatever, a red card, yeah, you know, whatever, yeah, whatever it is, whatever the rules are. But I don't think that's enough. And I really like the idea of community service. I like to get kids that have digressed to help out with coaching to work in the canteen, your club canteen.
Oh, yeah.
Or, depending on the nature of the kid, they could even do something simple like assist with the ground preparation, putting up the nets and all of that sort of stuff. And what you find is that they have then put back into the sport in the area that they've transgressed in a fairly meaningful way. But let's say a kid's given an umpire, you know, a really, really hard time. I still think the best way to sort of like solve that problem is to ask them to do a referee's course or get them to referee a game in the middle just to see how hard it is so they can get their perspective and larger pictures.
That's a good one. Now, could I just close on this way? Your vast experience here at the school, you must have seen thousands of students, thousands of football players move through the years in the ranks, growing, developing, changing, and coming in and out of football. How many really talented players have you seen here or coached?
Okay, we talk about thousands, right? We talk about 21 years of sporting teams. One.
To the listener out there, one. Now, that should give us pause to reflect.
We're talking about gone on to professional contracts. Yes. And not only that, because you can get a professional contract and be sitting on a blooming bench for your entire career.
True.
Okay, I'm talking about like going through and getting paid and being able to live for a certain period of time off the money that's earned. One.
One. Okay. In terms of the generally talented players, you know, there would have been a few here because I've seen some of the teams that have played here.
We've had Australian reps. And
yeah, we've had those. Now, there would have been a cluster of those that have just simply integrated football into the rest of their lives, and that's the end of the story, yeah?
Yeah. And the saddest thing for me is that the ones that have made those sort of sacrifices I talked about earlier in the interview about, you know, giving up aspects of your childhood, I remain to be convinced that it's worth it. I'm treading on very, very dangerous ground here because, I've changed from a large degree because I used to be a representative coach myself and all of that, but I'm not convinced that the pain is worth it. And in my book, I remembered, I worked out what the ratio was of the possibility of a child or a person playing in the English Premier League.
Mm.
And we're talking about, after the zero point, something like 7 or 8 zeros before it gets to a number. You wouldn't ask your kid to do that if that was the odds for a doctor or a dentist or anything, you know. Yet why do we do it for sport? Because we're living vicariously through our kids and we want for them an unattainable success and future at the expense of a soul.
Love and desire drives us pretty hard, doesn't it?
And sometimes in the down incorrect avenues.
Yeah. That's a good note to close on. Thanks very much, George.
Thank you.
You have been listening to the Near Post Local on 2XXFM, where too much football or futsal is never likely to be enough. Football and futsal in the capital region. Go to the podcast for this program at www.nearpostlocal.blogspot.com. You will find a lot of interesting interviews and items there for the discerning football or futsal tragic. Enjoy your futsal and football. See you next time. Ta-da. Every day I